letting go is a habit you have to develop so that you can perform at your best. But, you know, I crashed a plane, which you're fully aware of. You've seen me talk about it. And that came down to the fact that I wasn't letting go. I was so busy doing everyone else's job for them and quality controlling everything that I stopped focusing on myself. And I was doing something dangerous. And I wasn't giving myself the preparation and the time and the brain space to accomplish the dangerous thing safely.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking, and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, everyone, it's Sam here. I'm thrilled to kick off today's episode with a guest who is sure to elevate your perspective on high performance and pushing boundaries. While we usually talk real estate today, we're going to be talking leadership in what could be described as the ultimate high stakes environment. And joining us today is Matt Hall, a name that might be familiar to some of you. He's the reigning Red Bull Air Race world champion, a title he clinched in 2019, making him the most successful air racing pilot of the modern era. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Matt is a third generation pilot with a credentialed military background. As a former wing commander in the Royal Australian Air Force, he's a combat veteran who's been awarded medals for heroism under fire in Iraq. And with more than 8,000 flight hours across military and civilian aircraft, Matt brings a unique perspective on precision, risk management, and performing under pressure, skills that resonate deeply with us in the real estate industry. So he'll be speaking at Elite Retreat this year, and it's an honour to have him here with us today. So welcome to the show, Matt Hall.
Thank you for having me.
Is it fair to say that you are Australia's top gun?
It's hard to say that because I know all the other fighter pilots and they're my mates, they're my best mates. And in the end, you can't operate at that level without being in a team environment. So while I've gone on to do some pretty cool things in my career, both in the military and outside, I have to remain humble because no matter what I do, even when I'm flying a single seat plane, there's a team behind me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to get into that today for sure. But I first have to ask you, I mean, I am a Top Gun fan and you look a little bit like Tom Cruise, I think anyway, and flattery hopefully will get me everywhere. But what do you think of the second movie?
I actually really liked it. I was nervous about it because, you know, I was like, don't ruin it. I loved the first one so much. It's like, oh, don't ruin it. But I thought it was well done. Like the first one, there was some flying scenes, which for an aviator, you can see aren't really correct, but there's a lot that were correct. And the aircraft themselves were correct and the interiors of the aircraft were correct and even the tactics they were using were correct. And what I particularly liked is, yeah, Tom was obviously involved in the writing of it and he didn't try and make himself out to be still a young jock fighter pilot. He acknowledged his age and his experience and even was ridiculed in the movie, which I thought was really actually humbling to see him do that to make it more real.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the people listening that might not be like Red Bull Air Race fans, can you describe for everyone what you do, particularly, you know, like in terms of the intensity and precision that's required in terms of the type of flying that you do?
Yeah, so the Red Bull Air Race in particular, it was a time trial event. Each run would take about 60 seconds. Think of it's like downhill slalom racing where it's a timed event, but there are penalties for making errors. The difference is we're doing this at 30 feet in an aircraft around and in between pylons that are spaced about 13 meters apart. And we're doing about 400 kilometers an hour as we're doing it. Add to that, we're pulling 12 G. The average person passes out at 4 G. The F-18 jet fighters that I flew pull 7.5. So we are significantly more than anything in the world that pulls G. And we're rolling at over 400 degrees a second while we're doing it. And we get a penalty if we're more than 10 degrees off angle going through a gate. So that's 25 millisecond reaction time to get wings level to go through a gate. So pretty simple stuff, really.
Yeah. While you were saying that, I think there's probably a lot of motor racing fans within the real estate community. And so what you're describing there is some of those complicated drivers do, but in the air.
Exactly. You know, the Formula One, yeah, and as long as they're not crashing, Formula One goes to about 4.5 G. They'll top out at over 300 kilometers an hour. that, yeah, we're faster, but definitely the amount of G we're pulling is more G than any planes have ever pulled the history of aviation. In fact, the planes that we're flying, the most maneuverable pieces of machinery that carry a human being, we're not talking just aviation, we're talking any type of machinery that carries a human being, our race planes are the leader of maneuverability.
Yeah. And when you talk about Gs, like you're talking about G-force, like can you describe what that feels like on your body?
Yeah, so G-force is just a multiplication of 1G. 1G is us sitting here, so 2G, you're twice your body weight. Basically, the way it works, you know, 2G, you just feel heavy. 3G is where your skin starts to stretch. So that's where, you know, everything starts to come downwards. At 4G is where most people start to pass out. So all the blood's running out of your head into your legs. And when there's no blood in your brain, you pass out. So then at 4G is where we have to start pushing ourselves quite aggressively just to stay conscious. As you take it through to 6 or 7G, most people can no longer function mentally because they're crippled by the G. When you take it to 12G, you can pass out in less than 0.1 of a second if you stop concentrating. And when you're operating at 30 feet in aircraft, that 0.1 of a second could be the difference between everything's fine and I'm living to I'm now dying.
Yeah, that is really scary stuff. And I mean, I know you're going to share some of your more interesting stories at Elite Retreat, but I do remember one of the last times I heard you speak was back at one of our events in 2017, and you were putting everything into building a team to be successful finally to get that number one on the podium in the Red Bull Air race. And then we watched on pretty proudly as you took the podium in 2019. So I want to get into this idea of team building because you just mentioned it, like you are the one in the pilot with all this G, with all, I'm not very good at talking about the G's, but with all the force and it's your life on the line. So how important is your team to you?
Team is everything. You know, I grew up as a bit of a loner on a farm, just a farm boy out working on fences and everything. When I joined the Air Force, it was the first time I was introduced to a team environment. But while you're a student, you're typically still intrinsic. Everything's about you to pass, study, all that sort of stuff. Once I graduated as an Air Force pilot, I became part of a functional combat ready team, is where I really learned the exponential power of teamwork. And I was flying single seat fighters, but still had to rely upon the team to do their job. Fast forward that to when I'm racing. I had some great team experiences and I had some bad team experiences, which I'll talk about at the Elite Retreat. But I think the biggest thing for me is the year I won the world championship. And as you alluded to, in 2017, I was rebuilding my team and my equipment because I had stagnated as second in the world. I'd come second, you know, a couple of times at that point, and I needed to make a shift of culture and equipment. So 2017 was a rebuilding year, and we got it right because by the time I became world champion, it was interesting because I'd watch people around my team and there was this rumor in the racing environment that me and my team didn't get on because we didn't talk. We just didn't talk to each other. And the reason we didn't talk to each other, we were so in tune with each other that the way we talked was a sudden nod of the head, just a glance at something or a tap on my shoulder would tell me, boom, it's time to do something. And because we were so well rehearsed and so trusting, we never had to say, oh, have you done that? Or what's going on over there? We just knew that whatever it was being sorted out. And all I had to worry about was my role in the team. And that's what a world-class team does, is you have so much trust. There's never a question being asked. If there's never a question being asked, there's never anything that has to be said.
Yeah, that's interesting that you can get to that point because often people say that the only dumb question is the one that you didn't ask.
And I totally agree with that. But in the end, if you've exhausted, if you've planned so hard that you've asked everything that can go wrong, you've what if, absolutely everything, what if this, what if that, how are we going to solve this? And you've rehearsed to that level that you are absolutely confident that no matter what happens, there is no question to ask.
Yeah, interesting. So how would you describe yourself as a leader, maybe back in 2017 and now?
I think leadership's a constant journey of learning. It's like everything in life. It's a little bit sinusoidal as well. You have good times and bad times. Sometimes you think you're doing well and then you see something, you're like, well, that was my fault. But I'm always learning as a leader and I'm always still screwing it up. In fact, just yesterday I was having a conversation with an employee and as it turned out, I was being a bad leader because they felt unappreciated and they're probably one of my most appreciated people in the team. And it's just constantly reminding yourself that to be a good leader, you have to be, first of all, be humble. If you're not humble, it means you're going look at what I've done as a leader. And that's the first way to get everyone in the team offside. So you've got to have everyone being enthusiastic and encouraged, and that's by being humble and appreciating everybody around you through good communication.
Yeah. The thing is, what's amazing, like, sorry, I'm just trying to sort of get a hold of my thoughts here because I'm a bit of a control freak.
Most leaders are.
the spelling in something I publish online, which is like such a small thing compared to what you do. And now I'm sort of thinking, well, how do I help my control freak tendencies when clearly you've got complete faith and trust in your team to be able to look after you to that level?
It comes with time. You can't trust someone unless they've got runs on the board that they can be trusted. But once you've achieved that, yeah, letting go is a habit you have to develop so that you can perform at your best. So yeah, I'll talk about it in August, but you know, I crashed a plane, which you're fully aware of. You've seen me talk about it. And that came down to the fact that I wasn't letting go. I was so busy doing everyone else's job for them and quality controlling everything that I stopped focusing on myself. And I was doing something dangerous and I wasn't giving myself the preparation and the time and the brain space to accomplish the dangerous thing safely. Now I do a lot of things that most people would consider dangerous or adrenaline. And for me, what I do now and the way I do it is less risky than driving to work on the road. And that's because whenever I'm doing something that has risk associated to it, which is quite often with me, I'm able to hand off the leadership of both the business and the control of the event and the finances and everything. I'm able to hand that off to the rest of the team. So my brain is completely clear of any obstacles so I can execute to the best of my ability safely.
Yeah, amazing. Speaking of execution, again, like I keep thinking about what you do and the parallels between leadership in the real estate industry and you've got to make, well, less than split-second decisions. Like a split second in Red Bull Air Racing is a long time, right? So what are some of the strategies that you use for, you know, obviously focus is one of them, but how do you make quick decisions, whether it's to turn an extra degree or a...
Where that comes down to, and, you know, so I've been reasonably successful in both the Air Force and Air Racing, and I'll get asked this a lot. And I think what it comes down to is two items. First one's preparation. Preparing for success, but also preparing for failure. Yeah, most people don't want to deal with failure, but if you can be comfortable with failure and rehearse it, what I mean by rehearsing is thinking of everything that can go wrong and thinking about how you're going to deal with it, that then leads to confidence that nothing's going to stop you. So then when you go out and execute, you're very comfortable in no matter what's going to happen, you're going to make the right decision. The thing that stops people making decisions normally is they're wondering if there's a better option. And sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't, but a decision is better than no decision. And when you're working in a high-pressure timeline environment, making any decision is often better than no decision. And if you've already rehearsed for failure, you can confidently make a decision that involves failure, but it's the best decision right now. For example, when I crashed the plane, I accepted that I was going to crash the plane before I hit the water. And the whole thing lasted 0.6 of a second. But I accepted the fact I am going to crash. I now have to do everything I can to minimize the damage in that crash, as opposed to going, oh no, what's going on? I can't believe it. Am I going to crash? I went, I'm going to crash. Let's minimize the damage right now. So that's preparation. The second thing is the rehearsal, and that's visualization. And athletes do this all around the world of visualizing real time how you're going, what you're going to see, what you're going to smell, what you're going to feel, where your hand's going to go, how you're going to strain. Eyes closed, graphic visualization so that once you go there and do it, you've already done it before and you're very comfortable. There's no surprises.
Yeah, interesting. I'm still scared though. I can sort of, I think, reveal that someone from Elite Retreat is going to go up in a plane with you in a joyride situation. But they're going to have a stronger stomach than me, I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting term, joy ride, isn't it? We prefer to call it experience. Sometimes there's not a lot of joy going on out there.
No. I guess one other sort of line of thinking I've got is that often real estate agents, when they go into a listing presentation, it's hard. You know, you've got life around you. Your dog might have torn up your lounge chair like mine did the other day. And then you've got to go and see someone and perform at your best. Is there any routine or anything like that that you go through to make sure that you've parked all of the outside nonsense that goes on in our worlds to be able to clearly focus on the job at hand?
There is, and it depends on what's the level of importance of the event. So when I was racing, I had a very clear pre-race routine, and that's the key, is pre-something routine of doing the same thing every time so that you end up in the right mind space and mindset before the execution phase. Because everyone's got stuff in their life happening. Everyone's got things going wrong. No one has a perfect life. People try and pretend they do on Instagram. They're normally the ones with the worst life because they're trying to pretend it's perfect. So you've got to be able to, what I call, compartmentalize your life. And you can't just pack stuff away in a drawer and close the drawer and never deal with it. You've got to be able to deal with what's going on. But you've also got to be able to compartmentalize and go, well, that's this morning's problem. This morning's over. I'm now at an event. Close that drawer. And it depends how thorough and how well rehearsed you are at your pre-X routine. So for racing, it was 52 minutes to make sure I got it right, because it was in, yeah, my life was on the line if I got it wrong. When I'm doing a talk, for example, I'll still spend half an hour not rehearsing my lines or anything, but just making sure I immerse myself in the event. So I'll walk around the event. I'll have an event sheet. I'm learning everyone's names and I'm making sure I've got the key message of what the event's about so that I'm immersed in it. So by the time I get on stage, I'm no longer thinking about the dog that ate my couch. I'm thinking about this amazing group of people and what I can do to help them.
Yeah, amazing. So you've obviously pushed yourself beyond limits, both physically and mentally. What advice would you give other people who are feeling like, well, I mean, we put a lot of limitations on ourselves, like all of our self-limiting beliefs and things like that. And I think you've pretty much smashed all of those when it comes to your own achievements. What advice would you give to professionals looking to push beyond what they think their limits are?
Most people put limits on themselves because they're worried about people pointing a finger at them saying, "Ha, you failed. I told you couldn't do it." They've got people that are jealous of them waiting to kick them. And people then put a limit on their own achievements because they feel like, well, I've been pretty lucky up until now and I haven't failed. Maybe I should just say that's enough so that I don't give the other people a chance to either kick me when I fall over or point a finger at me and laugh at me because I've finally failed. So my advice is, first of all, never consider yourself lucky if you're successful. You've earned it. People that call you lucky are the jealous ones, and that's their justification that they didn't do it. So if someone calls you lucky, respond that you're fortunate, because fortunate people work really hard to get their results. And the second thing is, if you're worried about people laughing at you or kicking you while you're down, be more concerned about spending the rest of your life with regret for not having a crack at something, because you'll never know if you could have done something if you didn't try. I'd rather try and fail and have people point at me for 5 seconds than spend the next 50 years wondering if I could have done it.
Yeah, good answer. So the theme for Elite Retreat is genius moves. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but we're kind of talking about the genius moves that people have made in their careers and also the genius moves that some of us feel like we've missed, because often you learn more from your mistakes than you do from your wins. Give us a little preview. What is a genius move you wish you'd made, and what's a genius move that you're really proud of?
I don't want this to sound cocky, but I'm very comfortable. It's always going to be, yeah, I guess your industry in particular, there's always going to be a house that you look at and you go, geez, why didn't I buy that back then? But at the time, you know, it's very easy in hindsight to go, that place, when I was looking at it, was only $500,000. Now it's 10 million. But back then, $500,000 was effectively $10 million as far as your own spending was concerned. So there's always those things. But I would say that I'm pretty fortunate, not lucky, that I've been a pretty determined person in my life, that if I saw something, I wasn't scared of failure and I had a crack at it. So I haven't let many opportunities pass by without giving them my all. Even my failures, I'm proud of because I learned from them. You know, I had a genius move by having a failure because I learned from it, and I gained confidence in my life to not be scared of failure. I guess one of my genius moves, you know, best genius moves that I'm proud of, is, you know, done a lot of things that everyone knows about. One of the things people don't really know about is that I bought an airfield 10 years ago, actually. Last Sunday was the 10th anniversary. And I was told by so many people, don't buy it. It's going to ruin you. You'll lose everything you've worked for. It'll sink you. And I looked at it, went, It speaks to me. It is me. I'm a pilot. I have an aviation business and it's an airfield that I actually flew at when I was a kid with my dad. And I said, yeah, I just see too much about it and I bought it. And it's probably one of the best investments I've ever made. So that to me was a genius move. I now run my business headquarters. People want to come here and it's one of the best financial assets I own. It is the best financial asset around.
Yeah. And it probably brings you joy too when you think about the memories of your dad and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm currently renovating a hangar to move into right now. And I look at pictures of me as a 5 or 6 year old and this hangar is actually in the background, brand new. And now I'm rebuilding it to put it back in that condition. So it's not just financial. Genius moves often aren't just financial. In fact, I'd say they are definitely not just financial. Genius moves have to have that heart and soul and purpose in it, not just finance.
Yeah, for sure. So Matt, have you hung up your racing shoes forever or what does the business look like for you now?
No, I haven't. We're actually just started racing again. It's not Red Bull Air Race, but it's my mates from the Red Bull Air Race. We're racing again, but we're doing it remotely. So we're using technology to race each other in something called Air Race X. At the moment, we don't really advertise it too much, even though I'm currently leading the pack for the series this year, but it's a stepping stone to bring racing back to the international stage. I was very proud about not what I personally achieved or what the team achieved. I was very proud about what air racing achieved for both the aviation industry and for also motivating the next generation to do something spectacular with their lives. So if we can bring that back as a common event, something I'd be very proud of, and I will continue to push that for the next number of years. Yeah, at some stage, I am going to be too old to race, but at the moment, I still enjoy it. I still feel I've got the ability to do it. So while those two items are still intact, I will continue to do it. In the meantime, we're also doing, obviously, corporate speaking displays. I run my own airfield, obviously, and I've got a whole heap of things that we do. And the list of things that we still want to do is massive. So I'm not going to be bored anytime soon, but racing is still, I'd say, one of my other genius move achievements. And I'm very keen to bring it back, not for myself, but for the next generation.
Yeah, amazing. Well, we can't wait to catch up with you at Elite Retreat and hear about all of your escapades in the last few years and then some. But I want to thank you for joining me today, just as a little bit of a taster to everyone who is coming to Elite Retreat on Hayman Island. If there was one thing or one little tip that you'd like to leave the audience with, what would it be?
Enjoy the journey. You know, we all suffer from it as high achievers. Once again, there's not a single high achiever that tends to look too far into the distance about where they're going rather than where they're at. And it's something I'm constantly working on with myself is to stay grounded, enjoy the feel of the grass that I'm currently standing on, not the desire of the tiled floor in the big house. There's definitely a need for dreams and vision and goals. But if you're not enjoying the journey, what's the point of getting there in the first place?
Even if it is at 8 Gs.
Even if it is at 8 Gs.
Amazing. Matt Hall, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.